Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You can make things way too complicated, and the complexities is what holds everybody back. It makes you tired. There's too much to focus on. There's too much to juggle. And over the last 2 years, I've been trying to untie those complexities, but you should never make them in the first place. So keep things really simple. Keep things focused, and don't necessarily aim for the stars. Keep it manageable.
Hello and welcome back to Beautiful Lives, the podcast in which I, Madeline Spencer, am joined by guests to share some of the challenges they've faced and triumphs they've enjoyed during their life, as well as touching on the relationship between their inner and outer self and where beauty memories and rituals have had an impact. Today, I'm joined by the English fashion designer Alice Templey, MBE. Alice founded her eponymous brand in 2000 after stints at the Royal College of Art and Central St Martins, and her designs have since been worn by Kate Middleton, Madonna, Beyoncé and Halle Berry, among many, many others. Today, Alice and I discuss that ascent and some of the challenges that have come with running a brand alongside being a mum, how being a creative at the helm of a business can at times pull you away from the very thing that put your name on the map, her signature red lipstick and, of course, the origin of that inimitable Templey aesthetic. Here's Alice.
Hi, Alice.
Hi, nice.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome. I'd like you to take me back to your childhood, if you would. Where did you grow up? What was around you? What were you looking at?
I grew up in deepest Somerset, overlooking the Somerset Levels on a cider farm. And I was very much a sort of tomboy when I was growing up. And we were very involved in the seasons of the farm. So looking at apple picking, cider making, lambing, you know, it was very farmy and hand-me-down clothes. And I think my dad really wanted me to be a boy. But it was, yeah, deepest Somerset, which is still very ingrained in my everything about me.
How many children?
I was the eldest of four, yeah.
And was there a boy?
The boy was the younger one, who's
right.
14 years younger than me. And yeah, three girls. And then my dad was really happy to have a boy.
Were there any touchstone memories where you looked at someone as a child and thought, oh my God, I'd love to look like that as a grown up?
I think when you kind of grow up kind of with long hair, hand-me-down clothes, wellies, I remember vividly the more sort of flamboyant friends of my parents that kind of always made an impression with, you know, how they dressed and how kind of either sort of colourful and eccentric they were. And they were mainly artists, either being Sally Tuffin from Tuffin and Four from the 70s or Candice Bahuth, somebody who did amazing tapestries and looks a little bit like kind of Cleopatra. They really made an impression with me. And then also discovering film noir when I was about 11, I couldn't believe like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and all of those kind of old Hollywood greats. That really definitely made an impression. And then so I started cutting things up and dancing around to music, wearing the things I'd made at a young age, just sort of transported into that world that was the opposite of the wonderful world I grew up with. But it definitely inspired something.
And did that strong glamour that I suppose it, to my mind, belongs to a city, did that make you feel that you wanted to move into a city and work in a city and be part of commerce?
I did move when I was 17, 18. I moved to London and I did, you know, I loved going out. I loved dressing up. I spent a lot of time in and around Soho and Covent Garden and, you know, worked in some of the great bars of the time, supporting myself through college. And we used to dress up and go out and go clubbing and things afterwards. And it was definitely totally different to obviously how I'd grown up and from the countryside. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bipolar personality, although sometimes I question myself. But I think that the love of like the countryside and the roots and the kind of bucolic Somerset, as well as
that sort of bright lights, dressing up, escapists definitely play two sides of my character, and also probably are very evident in the clothes that we make. Mm. So you have a bias cut dress, but you might now have like the outerwear piece, and it's all within one kind of cohesive wardrobe. My girl can just travel across both.
Yeah. Sam McKnight came on the podcast and he referred to the moment where you go from being your home self to going out as a moment of becoming, and he said that's part of his job, to make someone feel like they've become.
That's interesting, yeah.
And I wonder if for you, when you went to London, or when you were dressing up and maybe moving towards that film noir aesthetic, whether to you that felt like a switch.
Yeah, I think when I first went out and I kind of found these, you know, it was all charity shops because I never owned a designed piece of clothing in my life and never grew up with it around me or owned it. So I'd always find amazing things in kind of charity shops, thrift shops, whatever. But when you find like a really well-cut suit and you go out in the evening and you've got your trilby hat and a well-cut suit, I always remember it makes you feel in a different way. And if you go out and you have, you know, you wear your hair slightly differently, not that I do often, but or you wear something kind of very opulent and bias cut, you literally feel, it transports you, so you can feel like you're a totally different way. Mm. You either feel kind of empowered with what you're wearing, a bit like a leather coat today, if I want, like I could be a dominatrix. Yeah, it's just this, the way that clothes make you feel is really not to be dismissed.
No. When did you decide that you wanted to go to college and become a designer?
Well, I used to make and sell things from the age of 11. I was always doing textile-y pieces, and I knew that I wanted to go to... I was pushed into doing science, so I did that for a while. But then I went to art school after all my A-levels and everything, and then knew that I wanted to continue doing textile work. And weirdly, it's been 20 years, but I fell into fashion because it was a way of making my textiles into clothes to make money. Mm. I still don't want to be in fashion. I don't even like the fashion. I mean, I like making things, but the fashion industry I don't agree with in many ways, and trying to approach it in a different way. I don't agree with the seasons, and I don't agree with many things, but mm. I still want to become that textile artist. So I'm trying still after 20 years to get myself a day a week, which I think I'm going to have to do. Otherwise, you know, when you lie on your deathbed and you're like, what didn't I do? Mm-hmm. That's what I want to be doing. And I know for a creative, when you start running a business, it takes you away from your creativity sometimes. And I think that's the hardest place to be when you don't feel like you're in touch with it. So me working on, you know, rugs with local suppliers, working with my local suppliers, having a much bigger studio space now in Somerset has brought me more connected to it. But I need to do kind of more. You know, I'm not a fashion person. I'm a creative person. And that doesn't necessarily need to be clothing.
Yeah.
But I think if I push with that side of what I like, then that obviously becomes, you know, a strong thing for my business too. So it's basically, okay, who am I and what do I want to be? And what is the business and what does that need to be? And can they make each other, you know, more interesting going forward? Because there's that, I don't know, when you grow up and you're a creative and you have that feeling in your head when people say, oh, you're a fashion designer. Like, no, I'm not. But I love the, you know, the making and the craft and the skill of it all. But just the fact that it's all around the clothing is very restrictive, I find.
It's an interesting tension, because I think when you are creative, you want some degree of success so that you can make that the thing you do all day. But the minute that tips into being successful, you're completely right. You're pulled away from that and you're managing a business suddenly and a vision. And sometimes just the nitty gritty can be the exciting bit and the bit that charges you.
Yeah, and I think there's just this balance between having a company which involves lots of people, and it's like, you know, there's lots of cogs to a company that runs, and then you're part of that. But you have your creative outlet as well, where you're really literally just, it's like a kind of tonic for the brain. Unless you're doing it, you just end up like that the character in Rango that sort of freezes because they don't have that outlet.
Yeah.
So, it's just, that's time management, really. It's like for a mother or anybody working, or a working mother or anybody working with anything, we all have to sort of find that balance.
It's interesting you said that about the fashion industry. It's come under a little bit of fire recently. And I think perhaps instinctively you're very much ahead of the curve because this seems to be the way things are going. But could you touch on some of the difficult elements then for a designer when you're working within the framework that already exists? People want you to do X number of shows and X number of seasons and things. What bothers you about that?
Well, I think there's creative fashion and there's non-creative fashion. There's cut and sew and seasons and speed and the kind of that price point of clothing. And I mean, we just think about it. You start your collection a year before, about to start spring, summer 2023, swatching ideas, developing components. It's just so much work goes into it and the researching it. And then you end up, you know, painting all of the elements and doing all of our embroideries and developing fabrics. And you put it together and you make the patterns and you put part of yourself into it. It gets then sold wholesale and you wait for people to choose what they like and what they don't like. And maybe the wholesale people have a different sort of taste. So they'll buy different in a display it in a different way. And anyway, then you have your orders and then 6 months later you deliver it. Mm. And then 3 months after that, after a whole year of from development to waiting, manufacturing, doing everything, 3 months later, the fashion system decides it's on sale because the season's changed or they want new stuff. Whereas if you've got the most beautiful embroidery anglais or lace dress, or we were in the warehouse yesterday, beautiful hand-stitched sort of gowns, why should that ever be like, okay, out, next? So that we're just sort of cherry-picking those amazing things for the archive where they've got a stamp and those just things are just, they just are. You just don't mess with them.
I completely agree.
And I just think for a creative, when it's that labour intensive, it can be, it's just kind of frustrating because we're now not doing four seasons a year. I don't know how I managed to do four seasons a year, all the collaborations, two bridal seasons a year. Mm. I mean, that's just not healthy. And it's also not, you just end up running and running and spiraling. Mm. So now we do two. So they're going to be much tighter, much more focused, made locally. Gives me time to really develop and push and explore. And most of that collection will be like, right, this is protected. This is how we're going to do it. Mm. And I'll be, it's just about making things that aren't, it's not a mass product. It's a beautiful product. And that should be treasured. And then we're obviously extending into homeware, and which is exciting, finally. And
a very natural synergy for your brand, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and other categories. It's also the time and the energy needed for that. Mm. But that's really exciting. That sort of stuff excites me.
Many people listening won't be part of the fashion world. So for those people, how much...
Lucky you.
For those people, how much is there a... I want to say Devil Wears Prada element, but how much is there that sort of frontline like bitchiness and all of that sort of thing?
Not in my company. My company, my team, absolutely lovely. There's none of that. There's no egos. There's no nothing. Mm. We're all very creative and very hardworking and passionate people who just generally enjoy the process of making and doing, and they are within some, whether it's the kind of more... I don't know, commercial side and that side. Yes, there can be, but we've never really experienced it and we certainly don't play to it. And often it's sort of the younger people wanting to get into fashion that behave like that, thinking that's what it is, but it's not. All the best editors are the nicest people in the world. All the best stylists are just, they're good. There's a lot of very good, very, very inspiring people in the industry. And I'm very good at shielding myself from anything that I don't want to be around.
Take me back to when you were working in bars. If you had a picture in front of you, what did you look like?
I used to get chatted up by a lot of dodgy men, especially in the Met Bar. And when I was a student, well, in the Met Bar was a tight all-in-one Donna Karan jumpsuit. I was probably just waist lighter and was young.
Mm-hmm. And still the long hair, the red lips?
Long hair, red lips, just probably sort of a few stone lighter.
Tell me about the red lips. When did they come about and what brands have you loved and what are you wearing today?
Brands I love. I'm obviously quite loyal to Friends, always have been. Obviously, Charlotte Tilbury is one of my best friends and therefore my drawers are only her makeup. tell Laura was made after Laura Bailey, another friend, obviously. And I think that's what I've got on today, that orangey red. But otherwise, I don't really wear that much makeup. I like a run out of Charlotte's number two natural look base. Otherwise, it's the Chantecaille one, which is the other one I've got left. Chantecaille is good makeup. For the skin, and then just a bit of bronzer at Charlotte Tilbury's, and that's it. My routine in the morning is all of about 30 seconds.
And in terms of your like more like long grooming things, like say hairdressing, things like that, are you someone who goes and has your hair done at one particular place and has certain things done?
Nicola at John Feeder, who if ever I have my hair done by somebody else, weirdly it goes the wrong colour or it's just I won't let anybody else touch it. Like Nicola is the best for a reason. She's just great and I trust her.
You're now a mother and a brand founder. Is there tension between those two?
I think it was hardest when I was splitting my time between London and Somerset because I was just ferrying us both around. And then a few years ago, when he was 9, I was like, he has to have a country upbringing like I do. We're going to move there permanently. And I moved him. And then I was the one going up to London 2 days a week. And I found that really hard being apart from him. And then when the pandemic happened, I was like, right, this is just crazy. I can't sustain this life. I don't want this life of running backwards and forwards. I have to move my studios down to Somerset, make something, make a kind of beehive. Bees will follow as one starts something, somebody said to me. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter. No matter whether it's fashion or if it's something else, I need to make this move for my sort of sanity and my child. And I was a single mum since he was 2. And luckily I've had the same woman helping look after him, nanny. And she's got older kids and she's great. And she treats him like he's one of her own. And so I've had that stability. But I've always felt like I need to be there more. And as he grows now into a teenager, I think it's just so good we're down there together. So coming up to London for 3 days this week, it's kind of nice to be away, but at the same time, I know that I'm happy that it's not a weekly thing.
And if I were to come over to your house in Somerset on, say, a Sunday afternoon and you weren't working and you're just relaxing, would I find you wearing a leather jacket with your lipstick on, or would you be in a tracksuit?
Oh, I never wear a tracksuit.
Okay.
Probably be in a... Often Somerset, so dungarees... But I sort of dress the same most of the time.
Okay.
And I don't think you should sort of save things till best. I wear a lot of knitted dresses in the countryside because it's just so comfortable. And often my Grenson boots because you just all weathers or whatever.
They're fantastic as well. if you buy clothes by other people, do you find yourself tweaking it? Because people are talking a lot about this at the moment and kind of like making your clothes your own by having them slightly changed. Do you do that as a
I don't habit? Buy other people's clothes. I think if I was to buy other people's clothes, I'm doing something wrong. I mean, I'll buy like Wolford bodies or layering pieces or I'll buy, what else would I buy? Obviously shoes. And what else I'll buy? This morning I bought this amazing Afghan, incredible and really encrusted waistcoat on Portobello, which I would never wear in London, but I kind of would wear on long walks from the countryside. And that's my other side, sort of that layering, all of that sort of denim up.
It's interesting what you say about longevity, though, because I was just thinking when you were saying that earlier that I've got quite a few of your pieces, and actually they stayed in my wardrobe for... I mean, yes, I wore something in 2011 that I actually wore.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A week ago. If I told you now that you've got a day to be anywhere, doing anything, all to yourself, there are no caveats on what you can do, what would you choose to do?
I think I would choose to be in a very light, big, open room, like a painting studio, and I would have Radio 4 on and nobody to bother me and no phone, and I would just start a project that I've wanted to start for like 20 years, and I just would love that. And there is actually a room, and you asking me the questions, thinking I'm actually having next week off and I might go and find this room. It's probably leaking a bit, but find the room and maybe just at least give myself 2 days of doing exactly that. Because you just, life's too short sometimes. You've got to just say, right, I need to do this and just do it. And it's very easy for us all to find distractions and find like, oh, I must do that, or I need to do this, or and you just sometimes you have to say, right, absolutely not, and protect that time, because otherwise weeks pass that turn into months and years, and 20 years later I've still find other reasons not to do that thing that I really want to do.
How else do you look after yourself? Are you someone who, say, goes away somewhere once a year and has a, you know, like a real rest, or do you go on retreats? Do you have long baths, meditation? What does it for you?
I spend a lot of time in the bath. Try to meditate, but I'm not very good at it. But yeah, a lot of time.
What do you put in your bath?
Epsom salts, a lot. And then Hotel Cost have this amazing oil, which I don't use often because I'm very careful with it. And then I walk along the coast, on the Jurassic coast, just that kind of wind and air and walking. And when you start, and they're always like 2 or 3 hours long, uphill, downhill, with the sea in view. That's a great tonic. And I'd like to say I go away for a few, like, you know, a month, a year to detox, but I haven't really for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly as we can't with COVID, but I'm not particularly good at that self maintenance. I'm sort of still got that sort of farm girl attitude.
You've collaborated with Oscar to make a candle now.
Yep.
It's kind of like one of your big things.
Absolutely. I think lighting is totally undervalued, and I just find it really weird when people don't have, you're looking around your room, and you're, no, your lighting's great. But I find it very strange when people don't light things. And I think in Dutch, I had a Dutch girlfriend that I lived with when we were young, I was at college, and she was just saying how weird it was. There were so many words in Dutch for candlelight, and even she's half Israeli and Israeli, whereas English don't have all these different words for different sorts of light. And I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, light is important. Candles are very important. And the Oscar one's brilliant because it's a candle that burns at a very low, the wax burns at a very low temperature. So that means you can just pour it, you can blow it out and immediately pour it. Normally you'd burn yourself, but obviously this is a special wax. Mm-hmm. So it holds the scent, and you can put it on your skin, and it's just really, really nice.
Can you name any moments from your life where you outwardly looked pulled together but were struggling inwardly?
Oh my God, yeah, I've had about 2 breakdowns. I went straight back to work after having my child 2 days later. I was like pushing the pram about an hour after I'd had him, and somebody said, "How old's your baby?" And I was like, "Oh, it's only an hour old." It's only an hour old. Anyway, I went back to work 2 days later because it was recession, crash, blah, 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 it all kind of happening at that time, 2008. And I didn't realise, but just the exhaustion that accumulated, I got quite postnatal depression. Nobody at that point really talked about it. And nobody said, hey, maybe you've got this, or hey, how are you? And hey, I really think you need to stop working and go away. And I think anybody around anybody that's sort of struggling like that, certainly for me going through it, it's just so obvious what's going on if you're exhausted and you're working and you're in that way. And then I ended up getting divorced because the ex-husband wouldn't stop partying, and it was just really tricky. So that was a really tough time. And then another time when I had heartbreak as well, you go into a zone and you realise how sensitive your emotions can be, not just as a woman, but as a
sort of when you throw in the complexities of, you know, childhood and you know, the work and the stresses, and somehow I managed to work throughout the whole of it where nobody would have really known. And you can kind of hide it quite well. But yeah, there's definitely been a few times and I'm like the first one to see it in other people's eyes. Like you have a different look in your eyes, a slightly distant look. And I pick up on it with people. And I've had a few members of staff that have been through something similar. Mm. And it's just so heartbreaking to watch because you have no control over it. And when you're that overwhelmed, it is just a total imbalance that you can't really manage, and you need help with it, and it takes time. It's not an instant fix. So I find the whole topic of mental health really interesting because I grew up with a family that haven't had it or don't understand it or certainly aren't patient towards it. They're just sort of like, put yourself together. Mm. But it's just so much more than that. And I think so many people suffer from it in different level, different ways. And yeah, I'm always the first one to try and help or step in when I just see somebody's got nobody to talk to, because you can't, when you're in it, you don't know really what it is.
What helped you both those times?
The first one was long, and it was just long postnatal depression thing. I don't really know what helped me that time, just eventually kind of got through it. The second time it was just finding people around to support that were not life coaches or therapy people necessarily, but maybe a bit of both, that were there literally at the end of the phone, like, I need you. And just, I spent so much money with those conversations, but I had to have a crutch of talking to this woman who was amazing, and then a few girlfriends that were just, you know, and one male friend of mine that was just, they were just on the phone for me a lot, but it was just reaching out to your friends. You just say, hey, I've got a problem, and then it goes, and then you learn and you become sort of stronger. But you know, it's just, it can be tricky, you know, when you're doing a lot yourself. And you're just sort of trying to survive, you know, I've never had any sort of financial or any help like that from a partner or anything. So it's always been, okay, I can do it myself, and I will do it myself. But with that fight, sometimes you just become overwhelmed.
Yeah. And when you're responsible across different spheres as well, you can't let any side down. So then
you just keep
how
going.
How do you pull back? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at one time, my only midlife crisis was like, I've got one fox on my wrist and a T for Temple on my wrist. It's like, right, I wake up in the morning, I've got my son and my company, I've got to get up and I've got to get on with it. It's just little reminders right where I can see it.
What's the significance of foxes then? Because you also have a fox ring on.
My son's called Fox. And it's just because I like the name of FOX, phonic, kind of written in ink pen. Mm-hmm. And old-fashioned name, and from the countryside. It's quite funny because the local farmer said, why do I you do that? Nobody likes foxes around here. And I was like, oh, God.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish by asking you the questions I ask all my guests. The first being, what to your mind has been your greatest triumph, career or personal?
Personal, I just think bringing up my amazing child and managing to... do that, kind of, we've done it by ourselves. I think that's a triumph, and then just to try and keeping a company going over 20 years through trials, tribulations, recessions, pandemics, all of that, and somehow still be sort of standing. It's a test. You just have to keep at it. Mm. Nothing's to be taken for granted, and nothing, you can't become complacent about anything. You've just got to get on. Sometimes things don't get any easier, and sometimes there are highs and sometimes there are lows. So it's just the effect that I mean, I just think it's just still here.
Mm-hmm. What one piece of advice would you give your younger self? What age would you return to as well?
I would return to 27, and I would slow that person down
and make her not listen to others too much and follow her dreams, which is what I did. But also, you can make things way too complicated. And the complexities is what holds everybody back. It makes you tired. There's too much to focus on. There's too much to juggle. And over the last 2 years, I've been trying to untie those complexities. But you should never make them in the first place. So keep things really simple. Keep mm-hmm. things focused. And don't necessarily aim for the stars. Keep it manageable.
Yeah. And name three people dead or alive who you'd have at your ideal dinner party.
That's such a hard question. Because you want a whole range of creative and thought, music and all sorts for dinner party. I think somebody like Erte, for that 30s element of the experience of Paris. I'd like to have the dinner party in Paris, probably, with all those artists at that time.
Would you cook?
Would I cook? No, definitely not. I would have a cook. Trying to think of who it would be. Somebody like amazing, like Nelson Mandela. Bring a bit of Africa in there, and it's amazing. I'd love to hear about how on earth he managed to get through being in solitary confinement and in prison, and then out again, and how did he do that? What an amazing man. And then it would have to be Coco Chanel as well, just because she was just such a somebody who just didn't have any rules and literally somehow managed to create this incredible business. And she just looked like a hell of a lot of fun. And Marchesia, that woman that had the leopards in Venice with that incredible life and that amazing piazza.
I don't know about Marchesia.
Oh, my God. So it's what Marchesia, my friend's fashion brand, was named after. And she's got amazing flame red hair, and she used to go around in a gondola with pet leopards and have these wild parties. I'd like to be at one of her parties in Venice.
I'm getting the impression that your Parisian dinner party would be a big, fun event with lots of colour and flamboyance.
Lots of colour, you only have once, music, candlelight, colour. But dinner parties can be fun.
Yeah. Thank you very much for taking me through your story, Alice.
It's a pleasure.
Fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.